everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Flight Test Podcast. We did it. We're back again for the second one.
Two in a row.
What are we talking about? I wasn't here for the first one.
That's okay.
It's all right.
Don't even worry about
that
one.
I'm not going to listen to it anyways.
I know you will. You're going to be so interested. So I'm Austin Fury.
I'm Alex Zavada.
And I'm Peter Schriepel.
Peter.
And we are here podcasting with you. And we have a couple topics of things that we wanted to talk about. And really just catch up, because Peter, how long has it been since you've been on a podcast? Months? At least.
Something like that.
A few months. So what have you been working on the past few months? Because Alex and I kind of did a catch-up last podcast of what we've been up to. But what have you been up to?
Well, I did do a lot of things. I, like, took naps and stuff.
Lots of naps.
No, okay. But in all seriousness, let's see. Planes have been built, FT Bronco, VTOL. That thing is still in the works. I'm still working on refining that stuff and making sure it's perfect for you guys.
A lot of people were asking about that last podcast.
I can see that.
were you watching the Periscope?
Actually, I wasn't. Wait, Periscope or podcast?
We were doing some Periscoping of our last podcast. I don't know if you watched that at all.
Well, alrighty then. Okay, but yeah, there's that. There's the USA Today drone, which is basically a circle with a thing on it.
Circle with a thing? That's good.
That was pretty cool, even though it was simple. And also, let's see, there's events coming up. The JR Indoor. Have you talked about that yet?
A little bit.
Yeah, we just mentioned that we'll probably be there.
Okay. Yeah, awesome.
Well, what are you taking to the JR Indoor? Or Horizon Indoor, as they call it now.
I call it the JR Indoor. It's been that for like 10 years, so I still call it
that. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm.
But let's see, I'm taking to that. I will be taking the new FT Corsair.
Ooh. Dun, dun, dun.
If I get it done by then. Even though I have successfully flown it today into the side of the building.
Yeah, we didn't even get it on video. So what happened with that?
Alex was behind the gun and Stefan.
No, you always jump the gun.
Whatever. I hold the gun. I'm just using it.
No, basically, Peter never waits for us to start filming before he does something crazy. And a lot of times we miss the good stuff from getting on camera.
Well, I meant, Peter, what actually happened that made you crash?
Oh, the ailerons were reversed. I was messing with some settings in the Taranis.
Wait, don't you mean aileron was reversed?
Yeah, I was... wait, what did I say?
You said ailerons, and I said, don't you mean aileron?
Whatever.
Because you only had one.
Shut up.
There's only one.
Yeah, whatever. But anyways, I was messing with curves in the thing. It was reversed. It was working once, because I actually made it just fine. Landed it. Needed to put some expo and dual rates into there. And I forgot, when I tweaked the graph, I made the graph go the other way, and I never really bothered to recheck my throws. So basically, I did the same new mistake we've all done at one time or another. Fly the airplane, reverse the ailerons into the side of the building.
Everybody's been there.
It actually held up pretty well, though.
Yeah, surprisingly.
You put, a new rudder on it, new prop, and you're good to go?
Actually, the rudder was fine. The rudder just fell off. I just glued back on.
I'd have to imagine probably Corsair is probably one of the most requested planes of people that wanted to see things built.
In the history of requests.
In the history of requests, it's been the most requested.
Really?
I think so, yeah. So what's the deal with this Corsair? Is it a mini or is it mid-sized? Or?
Right now it's like kind of like a mini slash slightly mid-sized. Not like tiny like the FT Scout and the FT, what is it, the Mini Speedster or whatever? It's slightly like... a little bit larger, but it's kind of like really close to those really fast racers you can get where which are just bank and yank. They're really small, about 24-inch wingspan. That's what this thing is, 24-inch wingspan.
You know what the size reminded me of? It reminded me of the Multiplex Corsair, the Weekender series.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's very similar to
that. It's almost the same size as that.
A little bit smaller, maybe.
Yeah, maybe a little smaller, yeah. So what power pack you running that off of?
That uses the... I'm not sure if this... I think this is going to be power pack. I'm not sure if it has a name yet or not, but it's the same motors that we use in like the race quads. It's not the 1806. The 1806 will fly it, though.
2203 or...
Yeah, 2206 or 2204. It's a slightly larger motor. That will get it comfortably around the 50-ish, 40-ish mile-an-hour range.
Well, we're already up to 10 power packs. Now we got to have another power pack.
Yep. Don't blame me.
Yeah, we actually just put our 10th power pack on the store the other day.
It's crazy.
Doesn't seem like we have that much because, a lot of them are just like power pack A single engine, power pack A twin engine.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Variants.
We just added a power pack B twin engine for the Bronco, so... If you're looking for that lighter, what is the power pack B motor? 30 something grams, 34.
Yeah, I think it's closer to like 24, but it's similar to like a Blue Wonder, but slightly
heavier.
It's
a little bigger than a Blue Wonder. But yeah, you can get that in a twin engine variant power pack now.
So for people that perhaps haven't seen the episode, what is the FT Bronco?
Oh, the FT Bronco. Basically, it builds off Josh's idea with the Explorer as being like a thing for schools, being versatile, open to experimentation, and just doing weird stuff with the airplane. So the FT Bronco builds on that. It's basically a twin boom configuration thing that you can use for your airplane. It basically allows you to take the normal standard planes, which are just normal configuration, you know, a fuselage, a wing, and basically leave that whole midsection behind the plane empty. So you can either put a pusher prop there, or you can fly it like kind of like a P-38 or whatever you want. Basically, I use that to my advantage because I use it for the VTOL. So the VTOL in that open spot was where the propeller was. Gotcha. So it's basically a tricopter and an airplane, two things in one.
Yeah, that VTOL configuration has been the topic of much discussion. So, honestly, I think that if we don't release a VTOL mechanism soon, people are just going to start making their own.
Cool.
Actually, yeah, I probably with 3D printing and stuff like that, it probably wouldn't make... Probably went too hard to make one that works.
The funny thing is, I think I saw someone is actually taking on VTOL on the forums right now. I don't remember his username, but it looks very cool, though, so...
The trouble is making it repeatable for mass production is the kind of the hang up there.
So I have a question about you guys. You guys recently did a big project with USA Today, and we did a little video explaining some of it. But Austin, you're the kind of the one that led that project. How did that come to be?
Yeah, we did a little bit of a project for USA Today, which was basically making a Back to the Future multi-rotor. If you're familiar with the movies, you perhaps saw in Back to the Future 2. There's USA Today. I don't even know if drone's the right word for it or even it's multi-rotor.
It's like a flying camera thing.
Yeah, it's a flying rig that has a bunch of lights on it and a bunch of microphones and just kind of a cheesy take on a futuristic news gathering device. So USA Today wanted to kind of take it to the next level and just kind of show how far technology has come to 2015.
Yeah.
And so we were commissioned to build a neat looking multi-rotor for a Back to the Future event that USA Today was going to be attending. It was in Fillmore, California, where they basically were kind of reenacting a lot of the movies. They had a really cool DeLorean that was on train tracks. They probably had maybe like a dozen DeLoreans there.
When was the event?
It was October 21st, I think.
Yeah.
They had some really cool stuff there. They had they had the stunt rigs that they originally flew like the hoverboards on. And so, which was basically a crane attached to a flying board with two cables attached to it, which, that's how they did it.
It looks pretty cool. Like
how they did in the 80s.
It looked really cool on camera. Like, you could get on there and ride. I wasn't there, but I just saw videos of it, and it looked like they were really hovering. But we should also mention that the date, October 21st, that was the date that Marty went into the future in the second Back to the Future. They went from 1984. Or whatever year it was, and they went into the future to 2015. So that was kind of the reasoning behind the event, is that was the day that Marty was coming into the future. And so they threw a huge event out in California.
That's correct.
Peter, what did you do? So Austin set this whole thing up, and then you were responsible for making it a reality. What kind of specifications did USA Today give you? What exactly, like, were they looking for? Did they want something that they could fly, or kind of what was the project guidelines?
Well, basically, they wanted something like an accurate representation of what it would possibly look like if this thing were to exist right now, because the original concept was a news gathering droid, I think is what I heard somewhere along the lines. So droid, drone, it sounds pretty close. So they got that right. And the funny thing is, in the Back to the Future movie, there was also like a drones walking dogs, which I find kind of funny. And I would totally try that if the thing wasn't that dangerous. But it is. But let's see, about the, what was it? What they won. Oh, yeah. Okay. What they were looking for was like something that looked like it could actually exist and something that could actually work. Because I think the end goal for this project was them being able to actually fly this thing.
Yes.
So basically, we'd give them something that looked cool, looked kind of sleek looking. It actually does look not too bad, too, even though it's a half circle and a thing on it. It kind of does look like a lot of modern flying UAVs that you see. Just real kind of elegant, clean design. So basically right now it carries a GoPro and also a 360 cam. Austin, actually, do you want to talk about that 360 cam?
Yeah, the camera that we bought for it was a new one that came out. It's a fairly recent camera. It's called the 360 Fly. Mm-hmm. It's essentially like a... I forget if that was a crowdfunded one or not. I think it might have been. But now it's exclusively available at Best Buy. And the kind of the concept for it is that it's an action camera. It's a 360 camera. And so it's nice. It has a nice design to it. It has a good feel, nice industrial feel to it. It's waterproof up to, I think it's like 100 feet or more.
That's crazy.
It's a nice camera. The resolution is 1500 by 1500 pixels on it, which to me, I don't know a whole lot about 360 cameras, but that seems a little low just because the footage, you know, it's a little grainy. I mean, basically you're using a huge fisheye lens to capture 360 degrees around you, 360 horizontal degrees. And it's kind of how they get away with just being one lens. It's actually 360 horizontal, but only 240 vertical. So it's essentially just a big fisheye lens. But it's pretty convincing. And now that they've, I believe by the end of October, they wanted to have it fully integrated with YouTube so you can upload in 360. But kind of the disadvantage to that, 240 degrees as opposed to a little bit more. For every 360 camera, there's a little bit of a footprint at the bottom. So like there's a little bit of a, like a hole or a little bit of a gap, you know,
where basically the area where the image all comes together.
Yes, that's correct. And so basically that footprint is much larger on something that only has one lens. So if you look at 360 cameras that have multiple lenses, they're more likely to cover more surface area. But if you're just mountain biking up a mountain and have this thing fixed on the front of your bike, you're going to see plenty. You're going to see everything you want to see. But if you're creating kind of a virtual environment, you know, this camera is not really going to cut it.
So, Peter, what did you end up using to make the project? Like, people saw it, and a lot of you probably seen the video. But for those that didn't, what components did you end up using other than the cameras?
Mm-hmm. Basically, for the airframe, we had to figure out if we want to do this totally in house. But at the time, I had just a little under like 1.5-2 weeks ish to get this thing done. So completely designing something from scratch was probably not much of a possibility. And also with having the thing of turning it around to use, we had to go with the more off-the-shelf unit. Basically, so what we went with was the DJI S900. And that actually is a pretty impressive platform for what it is. It's coupled with the A2 flight controller. I was actually thoroughly impressed too because I was never really much of a DJI guy. So it was kind of neat.
Had you ever built anything like that?
That big? Well, I did build a helicarrier, which has more real estate, but I think this thing was more money in the air.
Yeah.
So this is probably the most expensive thing I've flown.
It was a pretty impressive package. I was here when it came in, and you took it out of the box. It came pretty much assembled for the most part. There was a little bit of assembly, like you had to mount the booms, but all of the motors, the electronics, all the wires, there's no soldering.
Yep, that's really nice.
You basically just had to attach the booms and, you know, plug the wires into the right place and then add the flight controller. And it was pretty set to go. And the little tiny details that go into the designs of the DJI products is really pretty impressive. What was that spring mechanism on the landing gear?
Oh, yeah, the retention strap type thing. Because basically, if you look at the landing gear, at each extremity, like retracted and exposed, there's actually no load on the servo. The servo actually turns off.
Yeah.
That component only powers up the servo to actuate it and then shuts off. So there's a little bit of spring there. They use a mechanical advantage to this design to hold it into place so you're not stressing the servo out, eating up power with your BEC, and then probably causing a crash. So, yeah, really impressed by that. I was like blown away.
There's a ton of little tiny cool designs like that, like the way the battery latched on. There's this cool little like aluminum clip. One of the other things that you showed me that I really liked, or I really thought was cool, was on the big DJI platforms like that, like the S900 and S1000. All of the booms are angled up, kind of like dihedral, which gives it a little bit more stability. But one thing that, and I always knew that, but I didn't know that the every other motor was tilted a little bit one way or the other to add more yaw, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that is smart too, because that caught me a little off guard too. Because basically, if you guys think about it, how a quadcopter or any multicopter except tricopter works is it speeds up a set of motors that turn one way and slows down another set that turns the other way. This creates an imbalance of torque, so basically those motors will torque the airframe around. And if you set those two motors that are torquing and turn them towards the degree they want to torque to, they even go even faster without having to rev up his high or use his power. So it's kind of like using a physical advantage, too, rather than just mechanical.
And then when it's hovering without yawing, does it cancel each other out,
yeah, pretty much? They're both evenly balanced, so it's just like, you waste a little bit of hover power, so it's not 100% of it is aimed down, but, yeah, but it's such so a minimal. Small degree, yeah, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, it was mm-hmm. it was pretty impressive the way that that thing worked. And which mm-hmm. Which flight controller were you using?
I used the A2, which is pretty nice. I heard there was problems in the beginning, but I think they got it all sorted out now. So it was pretty impressive. I say the one thing I didn't like about it was a really small thing, is how the GPS antenna was attached. Basically, they gave you some aluminum things and some really loose-fitting carbon fiber parts that you just stick in there and you're supposed to epoxy. I felt that was a little too DIY for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because if you twist it, you can bust that out of there, depending if you use, like, super glue or something.
Yeah.
So I wasn't too impressed with how the GPS antenna was attached, but other than that, everything was solid. It was pretty, really impressive package.
So you guys built Peter, you built it here in Ohio at our shop. How'd you guys get it out to California?
Austin, you want to chime in on this one?
We ordered a really nice DJI S900 case. It's actually designed, you know, to hold that particular machine. Really nice foam inserts. We're going to order it from GPC. And what I didn't see when I ordered it, and I was paying, you know, an obscene amount of money for, like, two-day shipping. And what I didn't see was that it was, I guess, technically back-ordered, but it's not really the term that they use for it. So it's nothing on GPC. I was in a hurry and wasn't paying attention. So ended up canceling that order because it wasn't going to be here anywhere near in time. And, you know, thought it'd be easy enough to find a good size case locally, you know, that would we could fit in there and maybe get some foam pieces in there and some bubble wrap and just at least get it there safely. And wow, I was so wrong.
Yeah. it's so kind of deceiving, though, because, like, the S900, though it is a gigantic multi-rotor, it's 900 millimeters across, mm-hmm. right?
Or actually, I'm not sure if that's true or not.
Either do I. But anyways, mm-hmm. it's big. Mm-hmm. But that being said, it does break down. The mm-hmm. the way that the booms are connected, it's you literally just twist this little knob and the mm-hmm. booms collapse down. And it really breaks down at a really small footprint, which I think was a little bit deceiving because it went from being such a mm-hmm. such a large machine to kind of being like a
big rectangle.
Just a big machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
But we didn't realize that it was still a big machine. We still needed a big box. So we kind of last minute, I left, I think it was, what day was it, Wednesday night before you guys left. I left and you guys were kind of scrambling to find a case. What did you end up using?
$20 tub from Walmart. It's like an industrial, it's actually a pretty nice little tub. Mm-hmm.
It barely fit in there.
It barely fit. It had, but it was the biggest tub I could found anywhere. Mm-hmm. I went to maybe 15 stores the day before we left. I forget the brand. I think it was like Coleman or something, but it was basically mm-hmm. a big rolling mm-hmm. tub. And it was an industrial plastic, but it wasn't anywhere near as tough as like a...
It was like a storage chest, kind of like. You
know. Yeah, it wasn't anywhere near as tough as like a Pelican mm-hmm. case or like a Go Professional case. But hey, it made it fine.
Got the job done.
Yeah, spoiler alert, it made it all right. So, surprisingly, checking something that big, there's really no questions asked. Like, I was expecting to, like, pay, you know, for oversized luggage. I guess it's weight more they're concerned mm-hmm. about.
Yeah.
But this thing was, like, oversized. Like, it was the size of, like, 3 suitcases.
Yeah.
And they took it, no problem. So we used pretty much, like, I don't know, maybe 50 yards of bubble wrap or something crazy and mm-hmm. just packed it full. And I think we actually overpacked a little bit because we weren't quite as aggressive on the way back and it survived. So I definitely recommend a nice quality case for anything that you're doing with travel. And I'm surprised we don't have more hard cases like that laying around because we travel a lot and travel with expensive stuff a lot. So actually, I think I'm just going to order some nice big Pelican cases and just because we can cut our own foam inserts and stuff if we need to.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a nice pickup. One of the other things I should mention, too, is the design of the dome. Because I noticed a lot of comments on the YouTube video. A lot of people were complaining that it was, like, too minimal and real basic. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, I kind of felt the same way when I started seeing it come together. But then I was showing the mock-up that USA Today mm-hmm. sent us. And literally, to a T, this is exactly what they called for. They were looking for something that looked mm-hmm. nearly identical to that. It was basically just a modern-day multi-rotor with a dome on it.
Yeah, a little bit of a flare.
And you know, it didn't look too impressive, you know, sitting on the ground.
It looked in the air.
But I have to say, in the air, it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, it really looks like a big surveillance machine.
Yeah, and even, like, with, you know, like a bigger camera, a bigger gimbal on it. Because we basically had a 360 cam and then a Zen Muse H4 on it. And so, like, that didn't look super impressive on it, but I think that having, like, a bigger camera and a bigger gimbal on it would... probably would have had a pretty cool look to it.
Yeah, on the ground, it kind of looked like a barbecue grill.
It did resemble that slightly. Yeah.
Once it took off and the landing gear went up, it was definitely pretty cool.
We should totally fly a grill around. I got one of those.
I want to do a flying campfire.
All tethered, though, just so it's not an unmanned vehicle. And then we'll grill. Of course. We'll have mini quads of hot dogs attached to them, and we'll grill them.
Actually, the FAA just recently rejected the tethering.
Really?
Yeah. They just did a 180 on that.
We're just going to have to get our flying campfire registered.
When you say 180 on it, what do you mean? Like, is tethering, it's no longer considered unmanned, or it's definitely unmanned, even if it's tethered?
Tethering isn't recommended manned or unmanned. Because, you know, it's unsafe to have a string attached to your everybody's known that. It's not like a shocker, but... So now my fishing line that I had attached to my multi-rotor is now obsolete. So, I don't want to bury the lead here too much on this. So, we definitely wanted to get into talking about some Star Wars craft, because that's something we've been kicking around a lot here with, especially with the movie coming out. So we're actually open to audience suggestions as well. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to do a Star Wars episode, and there's definitely going to be a lot of scratch building involved. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of Peter involved. And, we just want to make something cool. But I had a question that I'm sure that anybody here could answer. But why is it that anything that's designed for Star Wars, aside from sticking a quad into a foam body of a Millennium Falcon, why is it no Star Wars fictional crafts really fly that well? Like, I've yet to see one that really flies well.
They aren't shaped like airplanes. except for the X-Wing. The X-Wing is kind of like an airplane, but the reason why the Airhawks thing has a canard on it is because if you look at the balance point, like if you were to balance on those wings back there, now you have an aerodynamic center of pressure that's that basically has no, what is it, vertical stability? Yeah, horizontal? Whatever the rudder axis is on. Basically, it uses the X-wing principle to be part of that rudder. That's why you have the canard out there. So it bounces up front and it uses the drag from those things back there to fly. So the Airhawks thing was actually pretty impressive the way it flew as far as an airplane goes. But things such as like the TIE fighter or whatever, those definitely would not fly very well, at least not without just slapping a quadcopter in the middle of it and flying around all willy-nilly.
Well, an easy excuse would be like, oh, well, they're spacecraft, so they're designed to fly in space. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in the movies, you see a lot, you know, obviously not like Star Destroyers or something like that, but you see a lot of those craft flying in actual atmospheres. Mm-hmm. So, like, they're going to space, and then they're flying back to land, you know what I mean? So is it just safe to say that Star Wars is, you know, the Star Wars... universe is just very aerodynamically irresponsible.
They have ion engines. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah. Ion engines. That's what it is.
God, yeah. An imaginary.
Some
engines.
Of them. There's a couple that I think could possibly fly, like the A-wing, or the B-wing. Mm-hmm. It's like a T, kind of like a T-shaped kind of thing. There's also the Y-wing, which it's a little fat, but it may be able, you know, maybe put a big enough motor on it.
Funny thing is that there's one guy I know. I think he goes by the name SGT Talon on RC Groups. I've been following him around for a long time, but I don't really keep up too much. But what he does is he actually does a lot of Star Wars craft, like profile versions of them, and they actually seem to fly pretty well. At least some of them do. So someone out there is trying it, but I want to get my hand whack at it too. See how it does. With a giant Star Destroyer with turbine engines.
I've seen flying Star Destroyers, and they're pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. I would like to see I think it would be cool to make a quadcopter.
With turbine engines.
Quadcopter flying Death Star. Just a big giant circle, and then you could do flips with it really easily.
And then I'll put like a laser on it.
It'd be hilarious. Yeah, that'd be cool.
I'll get one of those wicked lasers, like 1-watt lasers, and burn holes and things and probably people's retinas and whatever. Yeah, I would recommend it.
Yeah, it's not recommended. Mm-hmm. So I think it's safe to say that we're going to attempt to put together a Star Wars episode before the new movie comes out.
Yep, I hope so.
Yeah. So what are you thinking?
Well, it really depends on a lot of things right now. A lot of things out of my control that I can't really have opinions on. So we'll see about that. We'll see what happens with it.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm looking at, like, Star Wars ships that could potentially fly, and there's not a ton of them.
I've seen a couple Valiant attempts at the Millennium Falcon online, and they just kind of, like, fly for a second, and then maybe do a loop, and then they crash.
Actually, I saw a great attempt of a TIE fighter online that basically used, invisible, like, film type.
Mm-hmm. It was a TIE interceptor.
Yeah, TIE interceptor that had, like, the film, almost like flight surface. You know, it was mostly using, like, an invisible sheet of plastic or something like that. Which, it looks cool from a distance. It didn't fly very good.
No, it kind of flew in high alpha.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, I guess you just kind of have to cheat it. Really, any way you look at it, you gotta do a little bit of cheating.
Especially some of the craft.
Well, just like the Airhog stuff that we just recently reviewed. You gotta take the guns off, you gotta have a plastic canard, and so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's okay. We'll cheat.
We still have one of those X-Wings. Maybe we can mod that for the episode.
I wouldn't mind putting a duct fan or another rocket motor in that one.
I just think, like, a prop on the back would be cool. Just make it fly like a solid pusher prop airplane. Mm-hmm. Some control surface. I've seen a couple guys do it online.
Yeah.
I think that whatever it is, it needs to be a battle.
Something. Rolling candles, fireworks, and gasoline.
Something needs to be crashed. Something needs to be battled. I think that's the only way. Yeah, someone's
getting fired after that one.
It's the only way. Something that we've promised to do, as we've kind of getting back into the podcast groove, we said that we would start taking some more voicemails. So I'd say let's dig into those a little bit, because we want to hear from you guys. And if you want to send us voicemails to be featured in the podcast, we're definitely checking those now much more regularly. So you can go to speakpipe.com/flighttest. Or actually something that's better for audio quality, because... we get a lot of them that really aren't playable, just because the audio levels are crazy, and apparently a lot of people in the flight test community own wind tunnels, because that's what it sounds like a lot of people are in. But there's actually a SpeakPipe app as well, so if you want to download the app, you can also leave us a voicemail through that, and that actually uses the microphone natively that's on your device. So as opposed to using like a built-in microphone or something like that on a computer... on most smartphones, the microphone's actually pretty decent on them. So I would recommend going to the app if you can. So,
also, if you guys haven't followed us on Periscope, make sure you do that, because sometimes instead of voicemails, we'll just go live video stream on Periscope, and people ask us questions there, because that's always fun.
Are we going to do a little Periscope today?
Maybe. Let's do a couple voicemails, see how that goes.
All right.
This one comes from Picotti.
Play away.
Yes, I am thinking of getting into the hobby, and I was wondering what is, like, the first, the cheapest...
At the end of... You didn't go quite far enough.
Maybe this one.
We'll try it.
This one's from Alex Juineman. Sorry if I butchered your name.
And we'll just kill some time, since there's apparently some silence in front of the call.
Turn it up a little bit.
I think I remember this one. I think this one came in after a few seconds.
Didn't realize it was recording.
Hey guys, it's Alex Juneman here. I'd just like to thank you guys for what you guys have done. You guys truly do inspire. I'm 12 years old, and I live in North Plains, Oregon, a very small town. And I recently had your guys' nutball, and I had a lot of fun with it until I crashed it into a lake, and that was... really fun trying to fish it out. But anyway, if you guys didn't have any ideas for your next episode, I was thinking that you guys could try and recreate one of the World War II bombers, like the B-29 or the B-17. Guess I'll see what happens. Thanks
so much, Alex. We're glad to hear you're having success in the hobby and having even more fun scuba diving in a lake.
Or your nutball.
But thanks so much for your support, man. We really wouldn't be here without you. Even just watching our videos and stuff, it really allows us to continue going forward and making this content for you. But as far as the bomber idea, I've been hounding Josh and Peter for a long time now. There's been talk about a Lancaster bomber, a B-25 Mitchell, I'd love to see that. I know it's a lot of money in electronics, so not it wouldn't be as approachable as for some people, but I think it would be really, really cool. Even if you only put two motors on, like a B17.
Yeah, have the two freewheel outside of it.
Yep, I think that would be so cool.
Fun fact that that voicemail, I did some digging for the voicemails of this podcast, just because we have quite the backlog. We actually have about 2.5 hours of voicemails that are right now that are stored on SpeakPipe. But this one was from 6 months ago. So hopefully if Alex is listening...
Hopefully he didn't give up on it, yeah, Alex.
Hopefully you're still listening.
We try to listen to them all.
That would be funny, though, 6 months later, hearing your voicemail. He probably forgot he left it. All right, let's listen to another one.
Thanks again, Alex, and sorry for butchering your name, man. I get that a lot, too. This next one is from Robert Huffman.
How you doing, guys? This is Robert from Virginia. And first off, let me say I love the show, and it's taught me a whole lot. Along with y'all's forum, it seems to it got me into the hobby, and I'm very excited. I have a question. I guess it's been answered a little bit on the forum, but I would need some help clarifying some things up. I built the Bloody Wonder from Elmer's foam, which from what I found out is a little bit heavier than the Ready board. I guess my question is, how would you compensate for the heavier foam over the Ready board? And also, is there any other tips and tricks I guess that you could add in there for me? And I would greatly appreciate it, and I'm sure a few other people have the same question. And again, let me say I love the show, and I look forward to hearing from you. And again, thank you.
Thanks, Robert.
It's a good question, Robert. And I'm assuming that you've either flown or crashed your Bloody Wonder from now, because again, this is a little bit older voicemail. However, from what I have heard about the Elmer's glue is that it actually works fairly well. It is heavier, definitely. The main thing you want to keep in mind is just nose weight.
You're going to need more of it.
You're going to need more of it. Luckily, the Bloody Wonder is a plane that likes to fly fast. So it may be a little bit of a handful if anybody's building Bloody Wonders out of a heavier foam like Elmer's. But just add nose weight. You can put weight in there or just put a bigger battery on it so you get a longer flight time and... make sure you check your CG.
Probably a bigger motor wouldn't hurt either.
Yeah. Power. More power, yeah. That doesn't ever hurt. Next one is from Philip.
Hello, my name is Philip from Germany. I have you sent today morning a voicemail. I have become for with the question if you can video... you put some helium balloons on your plane and fly them. Can you write me an email because I can't open the voicemail? Thank you.
I think I got most of that. Thanks, Philip, for leaving us a voicemail.
Yeah, thanks, Phil.
I think is what the question was, is can we do an episode where we put helium balloons on an airplane?
In an airplane or on an airplane?
Idea of helium in an airplane.
The way I was thinking about it was helium balloon attached to an airplane, which would be kind of crazy.
Yeah, I've actually done stuff like that with like the FPV or just like the vapors in general. To fly them even a tighter area, we just took balloons and taped them to the very top of it. And flew them around like actual blimps. Actually really fun. They would float down the ground very slowly, and you can just fly them around with such minimal throttle.
That sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
It'd be fun to take like a large, like the giant carbon cub or something, and attach a whole bunch of weather balloons to them and fly them indoors.
You can just power on, power off, just make it like a neutral buoyancy, and that would be fun.
I have seen an awesome video. A lot of you guys have probably seen it online of this. It's an indoor. It's like a YouTube video. It's an indoor air. It's an airliner that's flying indoor.
I love
it. And the whole airframe is filled with helium.
It's helium, yeah. Or maybe hydrogen. I don't know.
It looks so scale. It flies so scale because it's super slow. At first, I didn't think it was real. I thought it was like CG or something. Mm-hmm. But after a little bit more research, I learned that it was real. One of the other ideas that I've always had that I'd love to see happen on the show is I'm a huge video gamer, and I've always loved the Mario franchise, specifically Mario Kart. And they make, there's a scratch build out there of these little go-karts, and I've actually seen some Mario Karts, but I'd love to strap 3 balloons out of each Mario Kart and have a Mario Kart battle, just like in the game where you have to pop each other's balloons. So let us know if you want to see that. Next, we'll do one more here.
I don't want to see that. I would not watch that.
Man, shattering my hopes and dreams. I think about that all the time.
I'm just kidding. I would totally watch that.
Next one here is from Sebastian.
Hello, Flytest. This is Sebastian from Sweden. Wondering if you have any alternatives to your Dollar Tree phone board.
Oh, here we go.
I would really like to know, because I am really inspired by your scratch building, and here in Sweden, Def Brown is very pricey. So, thanks. Bye. Love the show.
Thanks, Sebastian. Yeah, this is actually question we get commonly, and actually we just answered it last podcast. A couple things to do is to look at the Flight Test forums and search for European foam. Also do a search on our articles. I think there's more than one article, I think, now at this point, of people testing alternative foams. Definitely Depron's pretty pricey over here too. We're working on it. Another thing to keep in mind is that we're hoping by early 2016, we've been making a lot of changes to our business here to not only get flight test kits, perhaps a half a dozen or so kits over to our friends in Europe and abroad, but also the raw materials. So the flight test elements and the flight test foam, or also known as Adam's Ready Board. We're doing everything that we can to get that to you guys. So we're definitely closer than ever, and I think that the first quarter of 2016, we're actually going to see some results there. So thanks for your patience with that, and keep on keeping on. Really, whatever you're building out of, it's fun, and you're getting great experience doing that.
You can learn a lot of the same techniques and lessons with almost any kind of medium.
Yeah.
I know Peter started with foam trays from his mom's restaurant when he was a kid. So
also, I'm not sure if you have it, but there's I used to use Owens Corning like fanfold foam. It might be an option. I'm not sure if it's available across the pond, but basically comes in like 50 sheets. They're about 2 feet across and 4 feet long, and you get 50 of them, and they're all corrugated together. So it's called fanfold foam. You might be able to look for it. I'm not really sure if it exists over there. But that's why I used to build out, because it was really cheap to use that stuff, too, for prototyping.
There's another name for that, too. I'm trying to think. You're talking about the stuff that, like, real estate signs are made out of?
Oh, no, not that. That's corrugated plastic.
Okay, gotcha. Which is also, I know people make planes out of.
It's a lot heavier, though, but you can definitely use corrugated
plastic.
Super
durable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have to make a bigger airplane to compensate for that weight. But so anyway, that's some ideas that we've had, and I know that there's people that have been in the exact same situation you have, but have actually done a lot of experimenting. So definitely do some searching on the flight test forums and articles for that. Okay, next podcast. Or next voicemail, rather. This one's from Artie.
G'day from down under. This is Artie and Ollie from Queensland, Brisbane. Thank you for a great YouTube channel and podcasts. We listen all the time. Great for a drive to work and listen to you guys. Almost driven off the road 3 or 4 times.
Oh, we're boring? No.
I almost gave up this hobby, and then I stumbled across Flight Test on YouTube, and now I get to share it with my 3-year-old son Ollie. So to you guys, great job, fantastic show, great podcasts. Love it. You can't wait to watch the next one. Once again, thanks. Love what you're doing. Keep it up. And I really enjoy watching you guys. Thanks so much. Take care. God bless. To the After Hour boys, check out the S&B models. S&B Comet is the ME163. It's an EPP pusher. Really worthwhile looking at and getting one. Great all round when you've got nothing else to fly, when you've broken it. Thanks, guys. God bless.
Thanks, Artie. I appreciate that. Artie and Ollie.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Happy to hear you guys are sharing a hobby together.
I feel like this has been a very international voicemail session.
Yeah.
We've had like Sweden, UK, Australia. That's pretty awesome. Okay, what do you guys say we take one more? Sure. And wrap her up.
Sure. This one is from Robert.
There's too many Roberts.
Hi, my name is Robert. I'm from Chilliwack, British Columbia. I'm wondering if you at Flight Test and all your people will be looking into the Blade Glimpse FPV mobile camera system. That'd be great if you could. Thanks, and have a nice day.
Yes.
I wonder if that was before or after we did the episode. But yeah, we did probably do an episode. Again, these voicemails are a little bit old because we've been a little dormant with our podcast game lately. But yeah, there's a Glimpse episode up currently. We actually shot that with myself and Josh Scott. So be sure to check that out.
So what'd you think of it?
It was good. It flew good. I actually liked it more when we ripped off everything and put a 5.8 system on it.
Much more durable.
The Wi-Fi and stuff. It's good for beginners and it's fun, but it's a little bit of a lag for me.
So you guys, for people that may not know exactly what you're talking about, you guys ripped basically everything off it.
We ripped its head off.
Just put something better on it.
All right, fair enough. So you put a 5.8 system.
Yeah, I use the little VM1111 or whatever the heck they call it. But basically it's just a bunch of numbers and zeros, but it's the Horizon 10 milliwatt 5.8 gigahertz micro FPV system that came off the light, the Vapor, and the Blade FPV Nano Quad thing.
Did that make it into the episode? That like segment of you doing that?
Did it? I don't know. I can't remember.
I generally can't remember. I know that we shot some stuff for it, but I don't remember if we making it. But yeah, that's a fun little anecdote. Well, guys, what else? While we're wrapping this up, Peter, any parting words?
Nope. That's about it. Look at that,
42 minutes. Nailed it.
I got nothing. Oh, actually, I've been. We mentioned in the last podcast that Austin signed me up to race at the F3 Expo without telling me. So that being said, I've been messing up because there's supposedly there's going to be 4-inch class, 4-inch prop class, 5-inch, and 6-inch. So I've been messing around with some 180s and some 200 size quads. Actually, Peter, you've been kind of fiddling around with prototyping your own frame. But yeah, the 180 size is pretty awesome, especially as a go-to FPV. It's just something to keep in your car and just thrash it through some trees. Super, super durable. We've tried out a couple different ones, and they're all pretty straightforward. Anything with carbon fiber and 4 motor mounts works well for me. it's a really fun size frame because it's there's not too much weight, so it doesn't have as much momentum. So when you do crack it into a tree, it's pretty resilient. That's not as fast as like the 280 size, the Versacopter, but it's definitely more than fast enough to have a ton of fun and try different things. Because I found like when you're flying a really fast quad, like some of the Versacopters I fly, you don't even get over, you know, 3/4 throttle half the time, because especially when you're flying through tight stuff, you need to be changing momentum and changing your direction. With the 180 quads, you can really go full throttle and really push it as hard as it'll go. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty fun feeling. You don't have to hold back. You can just go, you know, push it to the limit, which is
kind of fun. I believe they refer to as ripping something, but yeah.
And another thing I've been doing is flying through the board camera. Not only flying through the board camera, but flying through the board camera without a GoPro on there, just because the 180s don't. I mean, they fly the GoPros no problem, but they fly way, way better without it. So, and on the 180s that I've been flying one of the Shen drones tweakers. The board camera is encapsulated inside the frame. So if you crash, I mean, it's really just low stress. Just go out and experience the flight. You don't have to worry about recording or making sure you got your GoPro charged, making sure you formatted your card. You just plug it in, put on your goggles, and you just go. Mm-hmm.
And go out and have fun.
It's a really, really fun experience.
See, the trend keeps going to for these racers to keep going smaller and smaller and smaller.
Well, actually, it's gone. It started at 250, and then it went up to like 280.
And 330.
I remember the Blackout 330, which I still like that frame. And then once it got up to 330, they started to notice that, like, once you get that big, they're not quite as agile before. Mm-hmm. So then it started going the other direction, and then it went down to 180. And now I think around like 200 to 250 is the sweet spot.
I'm waiting for 200 to 280. Yep. It's an identity crisis completely.
I'm waiting for the 500 size racer just so I can just scare the daylights out of myself.
I want to see like giant quads, like 1,000, you know.
I want ones you can ride in.
1,000 size. Like, I want to go to drone.
They have those.
Well, like all these drone races are getting so popular. It's just, I don't know, watching it from a spectator standpoint. The FPV footage is cool, like if you tune into their feed or whatever. That's entertaining to a certain extent. But when you're watching it from a third-person perspective, from like the stands of a race, these things are going maybe 40, 50, and sometimes 60 miles an hour, which is cool. All I'm saying is when one of these things crashes into the ground, I want to see a crater. I want to see destruction.
Yeah.
Like, that's why people go to see NASCAR.
It was like a dead mouse in the pile or something.
I have a feeling. I think Mini Quads is pushing the limits, and I really like all the pioneering that's happening with racing and stuff. And it has to start somewhere, right? But I'm calling it right now. I think eventually you're going to be seeing these drone races like massive, like Anakin Skywalker pod racer.
Well, just like we're doing something kind of new at F3, doing the.
Oh, yeah.
The Thunder drone.
We should all put, like, guinea pigs in our race quads. That way, when you race seriously.
And then you also have to name your guinea pigs so you feel attached to it. But, no, we're not going to do that.
It would be worse to watch. I'll give it that, but no. I would hate that.
So, speaking of F3, if there's anyone out there that's in the Atlanta-ish area, that should be a pretty interesting time. It's really the first... probably the first expo of its kind, really, as far as, you know, dedicated to, you know, the multi-rotor racing. Because there's a lot of expos out there that are popping up, like what are some of them? Like
Interdrone,
International Drone Expo,
there's a bunch of them
World Drone Expo. But a lot of these expos, they're geared towards professionals or like aerial photographers. People that are looking to get into the industry commercially is what it seems like some of these expos are geared towards, which kind of makes sense. I guess that's where the money is. So that, and money typically revolves around expos. But this, the F3 Expo, it's one of the first expos that's, they're really targeting, you know, the hobbyists and really the hobby in general. I think that some FPV pilots like, Mr. Steele and, Schizo and some of those guys are kind of advising for the event and trying to make it the best that it can be. So it's the first year for it. We don't really know what to expect. It's November 12th to the 15th, F3Expo.com, 20% off with promo code FLYTEST, all that good stuff. Well, guys, what do you say we get out of here?
Let's do it.
Yep.
All right, guys, I'm Austin Fury.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Peter.
Thanks for listening, guys. See you next time.
Thanks, guys. See ya.